Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm going to be following up on last week's show where I started to explain about past dangers and how past dangers can stop us from doing what we want to do. I'm also going to continue my Anatomy of an Artist interview series by interviewing Carol Edman, a very, very versatile and interesting jazz singer. And I'm going to continue my opinion poll, which is asking you all to vote on whether I should keep You Really Can as the beginning song in the show, and I Won't Go With a Whimper as the end song, and in just a second or so, you're going to hear You Really Can, or if I should reverse them, or if you know any of the other songs from my CD, if I should use one of those instead. And the show will be coming up right now.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice. Prodding from the voice, oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. Finding wisdom's other words, oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from no.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. It's another beautiful, sunny, maybe a little too hot afternoon in Sarasota, Florida, where I gratefully live these days, having lived a number of places, I have to say, and loved them all when I was there. It's true. I have loved every place I have lived, and I am lucky to be loving the place I am currently living in. I'm not going to say any more about it because we already have too many people here. And don't come. Oh, never mind. So if you're first tuning in, this is The Lynn Show. I'm here every Tuesday at 1 o'clock and also every Monday at 3 a.m. for those people who are listening overseas and some of my jazz musician friends who are just getting off work. Hello. If you have been listening since the show went on, if you tuned in at the very top, then you heard the song that opens the show. It's called You Really Can, and it's off my CD, which is called I Won't Go With a Whimper. And the title tune from that CD, obviously called I Won't Go With a Whimper, closes the show. And this month, I'm asking you to participate in an opinion poll. It has been suggested to me that I reverse these songs, that I put I Won't Go With a Whimper on at the head of the show, and You Really Can at the end of the show. And so I'm asking my listeners to please participate. You can do this by going up on my website. My website is called The Lynn Show. That's L-Y-N-N-E. You know, it's one word, The Lynn Show. And when you go up there, there's a little section for contact me. It's just an email. And if you would vote, say, leave You Really Can in first or put it in last, on my website, you can also have an opportunity to go to CD Baby, which is an internet music store. And at that internet music store, you could buy my CD if you wanted, or you could just listen to a little bit of each one of the tracks. And if you got the idea that one of those songs would be better to open or close the show, I'd be open to hearing that. So please, please do that, so I can have some feedback on this issue. On the website, you can also get my book. The book is what I base most of what I talk about in these shows. The first half of all my shows is dedicated to my describing concepts in the book. The book is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And everything I talk about in the first half of my shows has to do with helping you understand why, if there's something you want to do or something you want to stop doing, and you haven't been able to do it, that there's a really good reason for that. And as a psychotherapist who's been practicing for more than half my life now, I have discovered a number of the reasons that people get stuck. So I wrote them all down in the book, and I've been talking about them in the show. On my website are also podcasts of the old shows, and the book builds on itself so that now I am mentioning concepts which I described in detail in earlier shows. And if you are curious about those concepts, you want to hear more about them, and you don't want to buy the book, you can download the podcast or just listen online. There's also a workbook that has the exercises, and that is also separate from the book. Well, all right, enough about the website. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to talk about today. I've been talking about dangers that we are not consciously aware of, but that our unconscious is aware of. Dangers which it anticipates that we're going to have to confront if we make this change that we're having trouble making. And until our unconscious is sure that we can endure, survive the danger that we're going to run into, it throws up obstacles and makes it impossible for us to make those changes. So in the show 3 weeks ago, I talked about catastrophic expectations. And 2 weeks ago, I talked about future dangers and how they get in our way. And last week, I began to talk about past dangers and how they stop us from doing what we want to do. And I didn't quite finish, so I'm going to talk some more about past dangers. Past dangers are simply things which happened to us in the past, experiences we had which had a bad consequence, a bad outcome, a bad result. Something that we did or something that happened to us that made us feel bad. So, for example, let's say you took piano or violin lessons or dancing lessons, and there was a recital, and you get up there and you freeze. Your fingers won't move, your feet won't move, you're just stuck. That's a terrible past experience. And people who have had experiences like that often find that later in life, anything that's going to require them to perform or to be center stage or to have the spotlight is something they cannot make themselves do. And it doesn't matter how badly they want to. They can't make themselves do it. And that's what a past danger is, that you've learned that in this situation, humiliation, terror, anxiety, distress is the result, so you don't go there. The trick to overcoming this is something I will talk about at a later time. But for now, I just want to make the point that it really is true that experiences that we have in the past influence, dare I say, control what we are able to do in the present and the future. Last week, I mentioned the idea of cover story, which is one of the things that I talked about in depth in an earlier show. And I said that one of the most powerful past dangers is something called blowing our cover. A cover story is an idea that we have about ourselves that we are hoping other people will buy. It's part, but not all, of the truth. So if you expose a part of yourself that you had hoped to keep a secret, that is what is meant by blowing your cover. And I'm going to tell you a story about a client of mine whose past danger was just that, fear of blowing her cover, which was that she was perfect. Her name was Ray Lynn, and when she came to see me, she was 35 years old, and she was beginning to wonder why she wasn't married. For most of her life, she hadn't given it much thought. She just assumed that one day, you know, the natural course of events, she'd get married. And over the years, when her friends had been obsessed with dating and flirting and finding and all that, Ray Lynn had sort of secretly judged them and teased them about that. But now that most of her friends were married or in serious relationships, she was beginning to wonder if there was something wrong with her. Ray Lynn had a very good reason for having avoided the whole arena of love and commitment. Love and loving presented Ray Lynn with a frightening past danger, the risk of uncovering the fact that she was not perfect. Ray Lynn's father, whom she adored, was only happy with her when she was his perfect little girl. When she was good, he loved and rewarded her. But when she was bad, he punished and avoided her. The problem was, her father's ideas of good and bad were not constant. Sometimes being quiet as a church mouse was the right thing to do, but other times it was a bad thing to do. Little Ray Lynn could never relax. She could never risk just being herself. She created a perfect cover. She was the perfect little girl. But undercover, she knew that she was imperfect, bad, and therefore unlovable. Although she didn't consciously recognize it, Ray Lynn was sure that if she ever risked letting herself be loved, her imperfection would show, and it wouldn't be long before she lost that love. Before she could take the risk of loving someone and letting someone love her, she had to know that she could bear to be disappointed again. She had to know that if she should happen to pick someone who, like her daddy, was unreasonable, a loved one who might reject her, she would survive that rejection and not be too devastated by it. So, as I've been talking about the way in which past dangers, that is, experiences that we had early on in our lives, impact and in some ways control what we are able to do in our present, have you been thinking about yourself? As I've been talking about Ray Lynn and the way her interactions with her dad impacts, influences her ability to interact with men as an adult, have you been thinking about what you have wanted to do in your life and maybe have not been able to do? Have you wanted to change careers or go back to graduate school or move from wherever it is you are or learn a new skill, take a language or a musical instrument. And even though you know that you'd really like to do that and you've fantasized about it and you think you would really enjoy it and maybe the change really would enhance your life, but somehow you can't get around to it, or you make the plan to do it and then you find yourself too tired or too apathetic, or you think it's not worth it, or you're afraid, or you think you'll be rejected, or I don't know what. Are you able to think back earlier in your life to a time when whatever it is you're feeling now, you felt before? Because there is the possibility that what's stopping you is something that happened to you long ago, which left a feeling which is too painful to experience then, and which you imagine will be too painful to experience now. And now, I'm going to stop talking about this and play an interview from my series, Anatomy of an Artist Interview series. Oh dear. This is an interview with Carol Etmond, who is a wonderful jazz singer. And as you listen to Carol, be aware that at some point in the conversation, she's going to say I always say I came from the land of yes. One can hardly say a better thing about one's childhood than, I came from the land of yes. And you can see all through her story that having come from the land of yes, she expected yes. And it influenced everything that she did. I just want to say, I also interviewed her husband, Henry. But both of these interviews were so long, I couldn't get them into one show. So we'll have Carol today, and we'll have Henry at another time. And before I play the interview with Carol, and also after the interview, I'm going to play some cuts from the CD that she gave me. CD is called Experiment, and it's full of jazz, wonderful jazz tunes, many of which I had never heard. I'm going to actually play now. I'm going to play something called This Happy Madness, which was written by Jobim and Lees, and it is a song that I had never heard. And maybe you've never heard it either, but you'll be glad that you did.
What should I call this happy madness that I feel inside of me? Some kind of wild October gladness that I never thought I'd see. What has become of all my sadness, all my endless lonely sighs? Where are my sorrows now? What happened to that frown? And is that unsuspecting clown that I see grinning in the mirror really me? I'd like to run through Central Park, got your initials in the bark of every tree I pass, for everyone to see. I feel like I've gone back to childhood, and I'm skipping through the wild woods, so excited that I don't know what to do. What do I care if I'm a juvenile? I'll smile my secret little smile, because I know the change in me is you. What did I call this happy madness? That turned my world into a baby's bouncing toy. The gods are laughing far above. One of them gave a little shove, and I forgave me madly, madly into love.
straight from the land of yes, is Carol Ettman.
Okay, so I am sitting here now with Carol Ettman. So what I like to know is pretty much anything you want to say about what it's like, what it's been like, where it started, where you got the idea, how long you're doing it, how you got in it, whether it's been good for you, whether you would rather have done something else. Really anything about what it means to try and make a living as a singer, as a player.
Okay. Do you know that I didn't always make a living at it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I had a real job also.
Yeah. You had a day gig?
I have a degree in marketing.
Oh, do you? Oh my God, I had no idea.
So that's, I was in radio, TV, newspapers, every kind of media you can imagine. And I produced a talk show in St. Louis on the must-buy station, KMOX Radio. I was the assistant to the general manager, and then I was the program director. And I switched jobs a lot when I was younger, just as I moved a lot when I was younger. All in St. Louis. But I did it because maybe it's a little ADHD, but, you know, you do something for a while, and then you say, okay, next, what else is there? You know, teach me something new. Okay, I've learned pretty much what I'm going to learn about this, so let's do something else. But anyway, I was in that, and then I was also a director of marketing for a couple of companies in St. Louis. So, you know, that was the daytime thing, and in 82 I said, I don't want to do this anymore, and I quit. And then I didn't do much for a while, and then started singing more regularly.
Well, were you singing before?
Yes, very regularly. I was working 6, 7, 8 gigs a week while I was working. I was 17, maybe, when it started on a professional level. I was just out of high school.
So you're working day and night?
Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to.
Yeah.
That first job was with a big band on the Admiral Riverboat in St. Louis, which was a huge, there were 3,000 people on the ballroom floor they could handle. And it was a huge, and I sang with the big band. I knew nothing about jazz. You know, I was the chick singer.
Yeah.
And in those days you had the band and you had the singer. And I did that for about 8 years. During the week, 2 nights a week, and on Saturdays and Sundays, it's a matinee cruise.
Did you come knowing songs? Did you have to learn songs?
To this day, I don't know how I know what I know. I think, first of all, I'm sure I can owe a good deal of it to my parents. My dad played guitar and violin and accordion and, I don't know, banjo, something like that. My mother played piano. They both sang. My dad had a great voice. He did some recording, but, you know, that's long by the wayside. And when we were together, his side of the family and my mother's side, everybody either sang or played something. So it was always a musicale, as it were, you know, of questionable. everybody did it. We had fun. So I was always around it. Mm-hmm. I wish one of them would have been a Charlie Parker fan or a Carmen McRae fan, but not so.
Yeah.
So there was no
So what
jazz
were they
involved.
Listening to?
And they liked the big bands, you know, Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller and all of that. And then whatever was popular at the time. I remember my dad, my first recording. This doesn't mean professional, of course, but just my first time my voice was on record. I was 7 years old, and I sang a duet with my dad playing guitar, and it was my sweet little Alice Blue Gown.
Oh.
I still have it. I still have all that on CD now. It's been transferred to cassette and then to CD. You know, it's kind of comical. But I can actually hear some development, which is not to say that I'm anywhere near where I'd like to be, but I can hear the development. And it's fun. It was a fun thing. So I'm very grateful to have been around it from the day I was born.
Do you have siblings?
I'm an only child, and we have no children. So I have plenty of everything to myself.
Yeah.
And hence a popular little nasty little girl.
You think so?
Oh, you know, who can't be spoiled when you're the only one that there is to pay attention to?
Yeah, but that can be a wonderful thing.
Oh, it was. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really spoiled that much, very honestly. I'm glad about that, too.
So did they give you music lessons?
They tried. My father bought my mother a piano for an anniversary present when I was 6. And I started plunking around on it. Mm-hmm. And then they noticed that I even found some chords and I could play melodies of all the songs that he and I had been singing together. And so for my 7th birthday, they put me in a car with blinders, or a blindfold. And it was a big surprise. And boy, I was like, really excited. And we got there, and I kept the blindfold on. Walked me into this wherever, at the time I didn't know. And then I said, okay, now. And they took the blindfold off. And here was, at the time, the best-known pianist in St. Louis, or one of two best-known. And my present was piano lessons, which I did not want.
I'll bet.
Did not want them. They, of course, they had, you know, the best of intentions.
Right.
So I stayed that, and I did that, and I went home and practiced and a little bit and went back the second time, hating it.
Yeah.
And the third time, I worked myself into a 102 fever.
Ah, yeah.
I didn't want to go so bad.
Right.
And so that was the end of lessons. I had two lessons when I was seven. And then after high school, I went to the Institute of St. Louis Institute of Music, where a lot of really good musicians went, all of whom could read and had lessons, and I didn't. But in those days, I was completely fearless. And I said, well, I know this one tune, When Sunday Gets Blue. I can play that on the piano. So I went in, and I figured, well, you know, what's to lose?
Right. You mean you auditioned with it?
Mm-hmm. In front of the whole faculty. And but see, it didn't mean anything.
No, I understand.
You know,
I
was maybe 16 years old. And there were other things going on. I thought this would be a hoot. Because this is where the musicians hang out. It'd be kind of fun to be there.
Well, but there's another thing, and I suspect it's part of that only child thing, is that you had a lot of permission.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Very good, yes.
Right, you know.
That's
so
very, very true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of that sticks with me to this day.
Yeah.
I'm pretty fearless. I went in, and I sat there, and I thought, I was about number seven on the list, and people are playing Tchaikovsky, and they're singing arias, and I thought, oh my goodness, what on earth, what am I doing here, good grief. For a split second, then I thought, well, I'm here.
Yeah.
So they called my name, and I walked up on the stage. This is in one of those choir-type rooms, mm-hmm. with theater seating. And, of course, the whole faculty was Madame Soror, all these people, you know, are sitting in the top. And I sat down, and I played When Sunny Gets Blue, and I heard these chuckles. Who expected that?
Right.
But they admitted me.
Did you sing as well, or you just played?
No, I just played it. And this is a bad habit, or, let's say, a character trait, but a lot of times I do it for the game and not for the end goal.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah. So
can I do this? Can I pull this off?
Yes. Although I didn't realize at the time, but I know that that's what I do.
Yeah, so you have self-awareness of that now.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And I know that's what I've done most of my life.
Right.
So they admitted me, and 6 months later I quit. Because they tried to, I signed up for piano lessons, and I'd practice, and I'd come and play, and he'd say, what are you playing? I said, what, right here. There's the music right in front of me. He said, yes, but you're not playing it. I said, I'm not? He said, no. He said, you're following your ears. So once again, you know, 6 months I was gone. And sadly, I must say that if anyone is listening to your show,
mm-hmm.
and wants to be able to play jazz or pop or anything like that, take those lessons and stick with them. Because that really, it's not the reading so much as that's where it comes from. Jazz comes from classical. It's in every classical piece.
Mm-hmm.
The ideas, you know, but no one explained that to me. They just said, you have to learn this in order to do this. And I said, oh no, I don't.
Yeah.
I'm leaving.
Yeah, right.
Now I would, of course, do it.
So you've got something that I also have. They call it oppositional defiance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, you know, they say black and your mind is giving you white, you know, whatever it is, right?
That's right.
You get that right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a challenge because we have to get everything ourselves then.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
You know.
That's very true. And again, out of self-awareness, I say it's true because
mm-hmm.
when I was doing it, I didn't realize, but I've, over the years, noticed the pattern.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, so then, did you go to school for marketing, or you just had a talent for
I have
that?
A degree from the Southwest Missouri State.
Well, so you got through school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you decide you wanted to be in marketing, or
no.
was that a, that was you just
no.
went to school?
No, but it was advertising that interested me, the creativity of it all, and I knew someone in the business. I went with her to her agency, which was Winnius Sanborn, and the Sanborn being the father of David Sanborn.
Mm.
Who was a very good friend, and who is a good friend to this day. But I saw what went on there. I didn't know anything about advertising. That word meant really not much to me. Mm-hmm. And saw the processes and the creative, and I thought, this is really great. You know, the graphics and the writing and the getting to know the client and the product, et cetera. So that's really why I did it.
And you had a facility for it.
I guess.
Yeah.
It's not in me to do something I don't like or that I don't think I can accomplish on at least an intermediate satisfactory level.
To please yourself, even.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, unless it's, of course, mandatory for whatever
right,
reason.
Yeah.
I mean, if I have to sell pencils because the economy goes to hell,
right,
that's a whole other thing.
Right.
But, and during those years, that's what starts. I met Dave through his dad, because I was there that day.
Wow.
And the very first band I was ever in, Small Combo, was also the first one Dave was ever in.
Oh.
And so we were in this rock and roll combo together in St. Louis for about 4 years. And then when he graduated and we went to Northwestern, he ended up in a combo with my husband at Northwestern. So we're all still buddies, you know.
So you found advertising and marketing as a thing you thought you might like to do, could do, right? But at the same time, you held on to the music and the...
Always.
Always.
And interestingly, that's why I decided that's probably most of who and what I am. It was Darcy Advertising in St. Louis who has at the time had and still does, and hopefully will continue to, the Budweiser account, the Anheuser-Busch account. And at that time, in those days, there was one recording studio in St. Louis for that purpose, Jingle Studios, as mm-hmm. they were called. But we had an in-house, and my boss loved jazz. Now here, at this point, I'm not in college yet. I'm 18, but I haven't decided I'm going to do that. And on the breaks at lunch, we'd go into the studio, and he'd sit down, and he played by ear really well. And the first jazz song that I ever heard was Invitation, which is a great tune.
Yeah.
Sat down and played that. Then he played other things, and that got me kind of interested, you know. And there I was every day at lunch. So, again, from family...
Yeah.
To my first real job. I'm fortunate enough to be on that floor with those people at that time in my life, to be exposed to it, because nobody from upstairs came down. It was just us in that little particular creative area.
I hear this a lot from people who, in one way or another, made their life with music,
mm-hmm.
that things conspired. And I'm beginning to think there's some kind of pattern,
mm-hmm.
that it's there over and over again in some odd, bizarre way. It's just
right.
there. And this is pretty odd. I mean, one would not expect to be spending one's coffee breaks.
No.
You know,
jamming.
Listening to... Jamming, exactly.
At my first day gig.
Right. Yeah, that...
I didn't know the word gig at the time.
No, I... No, I understand. But truly, no, one would not expect that.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you have the career in marketing, so... How many years are we talking about?
25.
Oh, well, that's a serious chunk of time.
Oh, yeah.
I somehow anticipated that you were going to say, oh, I don't know, 5, 8, 10 years, I got tired of it. No, you really did the thing.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, you did the thing. And then, so you were singing at night or on weekends?
I did quit for about 7 years, but then I got back into it because the fellow who turned out to be our best man and his wife, my maid of honor, asked me to come sing with him. And it was a cocktail hour, 5:30 to 7:30 at a hotel in St. Louis. And he was considered at the time the best player in town. I said, I can't turn that down. This is crazy. And at that time, I was at this direct mail corporation, and I traveled a lot. And only once did I get stuck. But I could go out on, a 6 a.m. plane to get to a meeting and get out of the meeting and get back to St. Louis in time to make the 5:30 gig.
Oh, my God.
Sometimes barely, but I always made it except that one night. I mean, that's how much I loved it. But again, at the time, didn't plan it, didn't think about it.
No.
Just did it.
Yeah.
And it became a way of life and perhaps not a philosophy, as it were, but I don't ever try to force things. I just don't.
No.
I mean, you're stupid to sit in a chair and say, I wish this would happen. I'm waiting. You have to be proactive, you know, and you have to participate in your life. But I trust that if it's supposed to be and I do what I can, then it'll either be or it won't. And not to get all hung up on it, you know. So, and it's always, this is, you know, we're knock on wood, serious knock on wood, because to date, I have not been disappointed.
No, and
it's almost scary.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I do think that that's the healthiest way to live. you can't make something that's not going to happen happen.
No.
That's not an option. And so much of our culture is about trying to make things happen that can't happen. And it's counterintuitive, but it makes more sense to do just what you said. Mm-hmm. I'll do what I can, and then it'll happen, or it won't happen, and I won't get my, as the British say, my knickers in a twist.
That's right.
Over it. I think, yeah. I'm sure that that is better for your body and your psyche.
Absolutely. And that, what one thing I did learn in that process, though, is you don't sit back and wait for it to happen either. You move on. And
right.
As you move on, it either happens anyway, or you move on to the next project, or whatever it is you're doing, not necessarily a project. You just live.
Right.
You just go ahead and live.
Right.
And something else will come up, and that might be the catalyst for the thing that you wanted in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't know.
No.
So that's why you don't. That's why I don't try to force it, because I really don't know what's going to happen.
It's lovely to hear you say this. It's really lovely. I'm happy for you.
No, me too, because it feels good.
It's so un-American.
And having been in advertising.
My God, yes, you know, which is all about trying to get people to do things that they may or may not want to.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. Maybe, you know, who knows? I never really thought about it. I'm not big on analyzing myself, because then I think you can get a little silly, too. You know, you get to a point where you try not to overthink or overanalyze anything.
No, but you have awareness.
Yes, that's important.
Yeah, I think it's essential.
And those are the things that pop into my head. I don't sit down and say, okay, this happened. Because I have to wait till it's finished. It's a process that could last 20 years before I'm able to figure out why or what, if I even care. But if I decide that I want to figure out how did I get here, like you're asking me, mm-hmm. things are popping into my head now that I've never thought of before.
Yeah.
Because you're setting the stage for my awareness.
Yes. Yeah. And you're open to it.
Oh,
that's
absolutely.
The thing. That's the thing that's so lovely, I think. You know, and it's all about trust. That's what I think. It's about that you trust the universe and you trust yourself. You trust that things are as they are supposed to be or good.
Exactly.
Or, right. And some of that may really come from the only child thing. I don't know, but that is one of the...
I don't either.
It's one of the...
I'd have to really think about it and go back, you know. Just in thought, I don't know.
Well,
no hypnosis.
No, we won't do.
No.
We won't do that. No, but did you feel like they loved you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See.
Absolutely. I didn't feel like it. I knew it.
Yeah. Right. See. I mean, that's what shows. It was a safe place.
I always say that I came from the land of yes.
I love that. Oh God. Well, I mean, it's not rocket science that if you came from the land of yes, you expect the world to be, in some ways, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can trust it.
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely.
Right.
They did a lovely thing
for
you.
I'm not suspicious.
No, but why would...
Well, I mean...
I understand. You're not foolish.
To a point.
Right, you're not naive.
No.
But
I don't think so.
No, you clearly are not.
Mm-hmm.
But you have that quality of being willing to expect the world to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, mostly it is.
And I'd like to even work at that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are times... And usually it's people related,
mm-hmm.
in one way or another. If it's not the person, it's a situation that involves the people. And I can get a little jaded. And I do, at that point, try to find the good in someone. But I have to say that I don't waste a lot of time on it,
mm-hmm.
because I have other things to do with my life. So usually if it's uncomfortable after I've given it whatever I consider an adequate try, that's it. I'm through.
Yeah.
On, next.
It's the
you,
same
I like
thing.
You, or, you know, I don't. You're not my type of person.
Right.
I'll just avoid it, and that you're who you are, and I'm me, and I'm going to go ahead and be me, and maybe it'll work some other time, you know, that kind of thing.
It's the same thing over and over again. It's that you have this really acceptance of yourself and the world, and you're doing the best you can,
mm-hmm.
and the world is doing the best it can, and you can be at ease in it. You don't have to make it be something in order for you to be at ease in it. It's really nice.
That's pretty close.
Yeah.
There are things I'd like to make be, but they're not happening now, of course. You know,
no,
so.
That is not to say that you wouldn't want some things that may not work out exactly the way
right.
you might want them to. But you have the capacity to do acceptance around that if it doesn't work out.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so you said, okay, enough with marketing and advertising, and then you took a break, and then you said, let me give my life back to music, or a little, or...
I have to really think this through. Actually, just going back very quickly into the jazz thing, the only other exposure I had other than that first job was when I was younger. I watched the Arthur Godfrey show with my mother, and I saw Ethel Ennis on that show, and I said to my mother, I don't know what that is, but I want to sing like that. And she didn't know what it was either, so she was no help at all. And it kind of went away, but it came back later. I remembered her and
You still do?
What?
Remember her.
Oh, you bet. What was your question? I wanted to complete that part because, to me, that was another one of those things that I'd happen to be in the room at the time she was on singing a song.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those...
People don't look at it that way a lot of times.
I do.
But sometimes you don't see it until you go back and put the little pieces together, you know.
Okay, so I asked when you gave up marketing how you got back into singing.
Never really got out because I was in St. Louis, and I knew all the musicians and vice versa, so I still got calls. And I just didn't do it because after that, travel, land, come home, change clothes, run to the... It was a little much. I overdid it, and that's when I quit that for a while. Just kind of chilled on the music, and I listened. But then, and then Henry came along, and... The end of that story is that we got married, of course, and moved out to Reno, and he said, why don't you sing? I said, I never thought about it. Yeah, maybe I will. So I talked to a couple of the leaders, and I got a couple of gigs. And this is, again, something that fascinates me personally, because Flip Wilson, the devil made me do it, remember? That's kind of what it is. I don't know where it came from, other than osmosis, but... I thought, oh, let's see, I think I'll do like jazz. I really didn't know what that meant. So the first time I got up there, I started fooling around with the melody and the time. And somebody thought it was, a couple of the guys thought it was good. So I realized, without trying to sound, I realized that there was some inherent talent there, and I realized that that there was probably more in there that I was not aware of.
Yeah.
Something I heard on TV, radio, and I was picking things up and was not aware of it.
Right.
And so that's when I really got into jazz, when I got out west. So that was after we got married in 91. I was doing it a little bit, but I thought I was, but I truly wasn't until I got out there. And I was really exposed to it.
Yeah, I really do think it's, in a way, osmosis.
It has to be. Yeah. People request songs now, and they'll say, do you know? I'll say, well, I'm not sure. Just a minute. And I have to go, to myself. Mumble the words real quick. I think I do. It's a song I've never sung before, maybe never haven't thought of. Wow. But it's in there somewhere. Now, that doesn't work these days. A song I heard 4 years ago is still there 4 years ago. It didn't soak in. But, so I have to really learn now.
Yeah.
But I think, most of my younger life, it just happened.
Yeah.
Things, I say they just happened, but I know that they didn't just happen. I know I had a part in them. But I don't know what it was.
Yeah, it's like you were
positive,
soaking it up.
Well, I expect good, and I'm also willing to accept it.
Yes.
Because I do have some, and I can say that only because I have a friend who's has a fear of success. That once it's achieved, it'll go away. Maybe that's the reason I switch. I don't know.
Say that.
She's afraid if she achieves what she's capable of achieving, it won't last.
So she doesn't pursue it, or she doesn't go
flat
out?
She gets
right.
close to it, and then... Right. See, and I say when I'm doing something, and then 2 years, okay, I'm done now. What's next?
Right.
I wondered sometimes if that was the case, that I was afraid of succeeding further and I'd lose my job. But that's not it.
No, it's not.
It really isn't. Because I think back to those jobs, so
you don't care, right? There's something else around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there has been. So, okay, tell me what you're doing now.
Working at Euphemia Hay on Longboat Key.
Tell us when.
On Friday and Saturday. From 7:30 until about 11. We're closed in September. And that, if you want to hear it, is probably the last story I have so far.
Mm-hmm.
In the Fearless Department.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that somebody where we lived on Longo Key in the condo area came to me and she said, "Would you like to sing at Euphemia Hay?" I said, "Oh, it sounds fun."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Well, they're looking for some people." So I called Darcy and she said, "Well, I think we have, Monday nights." And she said, "I think we have someone. But can you drop off a package?" Well, that's real standard. You know, that's what everybody says. And I thought, "Oh, they're a mile down the road." So Henry and I drove by there and I ran in. I gave it to her. And she said, "Well, can you come in Monday night and audition?
Mm.
And if I hire you, I'll pay you. If I don't, I won't." And I said, "Okay." And she said, "You play piano?" And I said, "Yeah." I don't know why. And I came out and I said, "Henry, got to go to Sam Ash right now. I have to have a piano."
"Oh, you're kidding."
I said, "I need a little portable piano to play my..." I said, "She wants me to..." And I didn't tell anybody except Duncan Lamont, who knew about it. And he was the one that encouraged me to do this. So somewhere in there was Duncan pushing me. I guess he's the devil that made me do it. But I said, "Yes, I can play piano." Rented the piano, showed up. We had a great time. Duncan brought his horn in.
Oh.
He told some people.
Oh, so they came.
And Darcy was there. There was a lot of laughing. And I'm starting my sixth year in December.
Oh, my God.
And I'm learning on the job to play. So that's
a great story.
That's another one of those, "If I don't get it, I'll take the piano." I said, "To hell, if this doesn't work out, can I return the piano?" He said, "If you're only going to play it one night, sure."
That's great. That's a great story.
Yeah, I just walked in and said, "If I do it, fine. If it works."
Yeah. This for me, is a very good place to end this interview. But is there anything that has occurred to you while we've been talking, or anything that occurs to you now that you might want to say about working as a singer, or...?
Nothing profound other than I don't know what I would do without it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a fearful comment. I would sing at home.
Yeah.
So when you talked about when we were speaking before this, you talked about having something happen to your throat.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the worst thing that I could think of.
Yeah.
You know?
And
but then... I'd probably play better piano because I'd devote my time to that.
That's right.
You know, I mean, I just figured that there's always something around the corner.
Yeah. Boy, I want to stop right there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. If I ever heard anybody who knew how to take yes for an answer, it's Carol. And you can hear it in everything that she says about her life and how she lived it and how she accepted the things that came to her and how she went for things which other people who were not expecting yes would not have gone for. And it's really so reassuring to hear. And I wish so many other people had that experience in their life. And now I'm going to play another song from Carol's CD. I'm going to play a song called "I Thought About You," which I do know and has always been kind of a favorite of mine. So here, yet again, singing for you, is Carol Edmond doing "I Thought About You."
Took a trip on a train, and I thought about you. I passed a shadowy lane, and I thought about you. Two lonely cars parked under the stars. There was a winding stream, moon shining down had the same old dream with every stop of the way. I thought about you, and then I pulled down the shade. Track of one going back to you. Then what did I do? You know, I thought
And that was Carol Edman singing I Thought About You from her CD, The Experiment. There's nothing experimental about Carol. She's completely professional. So thank you, Carol. And you will hear the interview I did with her husband, Henry, who's not only a jazz drummer, but something else as well. And that will be coming up in the weeks to follow. So, yet again, I have overestimated what I could do in this show, and I'm not going to get an opportunity to talk any more about past dangers and what stops you from doing what you want to do, but I promise that first thing next week, that's where I'll start. So I have enough time to remind you to please go up on thelinshow.com and vote on whether I should keep You Really Can as the opening tune or I Won't Go With a Whimper as the closing tune, or reverse them, or any other ideas you have about what of my songs I can use in the show. And I have time to thank Josh, as I always do in every show, Josh C. Hackney, the IT guru who saves me from gaffes and makes things electronic possible for me to do on the show. And I think that's pretty much all the time I have. So I'm going to say, as I am fond of saying, that I will be back next week, and I certainly hope that you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. Singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. Chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten